This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Nation of Islam and its current leader, Louis Farrakhan, are frequently at the center of controversy. My guest, Sansaray Tate, has written a memoir about growing up in the nation. It's called Little X. Her paternal grandparents joined the nation in the 1950s because it emphasized African-American identity, offering a religion and culture with its own constitution, schools, and businesses. Sansaray's mother grew up in the Baptist church, but joined the nation when she got married. She sent Sansaray to a nation school. Eventually, Sansaray's mother converted to Orthodox Islam, which more closely followed Muslim practices in Arab countries. Sansaray left Islam as a young woman. I asked her about what it was like to attend a nation school and how she'd compare what she was taught with what children learned in public schools.
Our history was different. We didn't learn, for instance, that Christopher Columbus was a great man who discovered America. We learned that he was a wicked man who came to this land and kicked some other people off their land. We didn't learn that our history began here as slaves in America. We learned that black men and women were kings and queens back in Africa centuries ago. How else? Our math and science was very advanced, I think.
Tell us a little bit what the school was like. First of all, you had to go through a security search, a head-to-toe search every day before actually entering the classroom. Why did such young children have to be searched?
Well, since the beginning, the Nation of Islam had been, I don't know if under attack is the correct way to say it, but under scrutiny, certainly. And so it was procedure that anyone coming into the temple would be searched for tape recorders, anything. This was just procedure. And this was all that I knew since I was a very young child, so it didn't seem strange to me.
What are some of the basic philosophies and practices within the nation, or what were they when you were a member?
When I was a member, some of the basic philosophies were, yes, that we were created in the image of God, that there was a God force in each of us, and that is something that has worked for me for the rest of my life. But there were some other philosophies that Caucasians are necessarily devils, and that raised questions with me even as a child, because there was one Caucasian in our neighborhood, Mr. Stevenson, and well, his hair was brown, not blonde, and his eyes were brown, not blue, and he was a nice man. He hired neighborhood children, and as early as 8 and 10 years old, I was trying to reconcile how could all Caucasians be the devil and then this man be different.
Did you feel it was your responsibility to hate him?
No, not my responsibility to hate him. I was just taught this basic thing that these people who look this way are necessarily evil. And I just couldn't, reconcile in my mind how that was necessarily true. But then this man was the way he was.
How would you describe the actual religion part of the nation when you were growing up?
Very intense, very strict. There was a dictate for every aspect of our lives. Chew your food 100 times, brush your hair 100 times, think 5 times before you speak, fast every 3 days. It seems like it was very rigid.
But what about scripturally? Did you read the Quran and the Bible?
No, our beliefs were based on the Quran and Bible, but we read Elijah Muhammad's interpretation of the Quran and Bible in his book called Message to the Black Man, because we didn't think we could understand and interpret the Quran and Bible for ourselves.
Did you grow up thinking of Elijah Muhammad as God?
Yeah, he said he was the messenger of God, and that's what our lessons taught, but we worshipped him as a god. We had a picture of him in the temple, the same way churches have a picture of Christ, and we saluted his picture upon entering the temple.
Now, you went to a Nation of Islam school until you were 10, until 1976.
Correct.
There was no extracurricular activities in the nation school, no art, music, sports. Why not?
Because Elijah Muhammad said that part of the problem of our race was that we wasted too much time on what he called sport and play. Wasted too much time on entertainment. We needed to be focused on living better lives, women learning to be better mothers, men learning to be better providers, children learning to be men and women.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sansaray Tate, and she's written a memoir called Little X, Growing Up in the Nation of Islam, and she grew up as a third-generation member of the nation. One of the things you felt you were taught in the nation school and in the nation in general was self-respect. This is something that public schools would really like all their students to have now, and people are adjusting curricula to try to emphasize self-respect with varying success. What did you feel really helped you in the nation get a sense of self-respect?
Because we were expected to do well in school, and we didn't have a lot of programs to accommodate what a dysfunctional family or poverty or any of those things that become handicaps in public schools. We were told that regardless of our circumstances, I don't care if your grandfather died last week, when you come here, this is what you're expected to do. We believe you can do it. So do it. And then after you do and you bring home a report card of A's and B's, you feel good about it. And then you build on that, I think. And then you think you can do a little more, and you do. And you build one success after another.
The Nation of Islam school that you went to was closed for lack of money when you were 10 in 1976. And then you ended up going to public school. What was most surprising to you about public school?
I guess the laxness in our classrooms. I was on the fast track. I was in humanities in junior high school and high school. But so many other kids were not expected to do well. They were sort of just not expected to do as well. And I think that maybe if they had been, maybe they would have done better.
Were there activities in public school that you weren't allowed to participate in?
I couldn't be a cheerleader.
Because of the miniskirt?
Right. But I was a booster.
What? Didn't you have to wear a miniskirt for that?
No, we wore jeans and sweatshirts, and I still got to hoop and holler.
No, what about gym? What about wearing gym shorts?
I could wear gym shorts as long as my all-girl gym class was indoors, but when we went outside, I had to sit on the sidelines, and I didn't like that.
How did you dress for school?
Initially, I went to school in long dresses sometimes. Every day I wore a turban or a scarf, which left me sort of marked, I felt, because people's understanding of Islam then was mostly associated with what they saw on TV. Terrorists and things like that. But by the time I was in, I guess, eighth grade or ninth grade, I talked my mother into letting me go out without my headgear on. I told her that it wasn't modest after all, that I was in fact calling attention to myself by wearing these clothes.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I guess you were calling attention to yourself, even though those clothes were supposed to be modestly covering your body. How did she react to that argument?
Oh, she allowed me to take off the headpiece.
Were fellow students making fun of you because of the way you dressed, or because that you couldn't wear gym shorts outside like the rest of the girls in the school?
Yeah, you know how mean kids can be. And so they tease. And one of my classmates in particular teased because when I explained to her why I didn't wear the shorts, and why I didn't try to sneak and wear the shorts since my mother was nowhere in the school to see me, I explained that because my dress code was something I wore so that boys would respect me. She said she didn't think the way you dress had anything to do with whether other people respected you or not.
So, what was it like for you the first time you put on shorts?
First time I put on shorts and went outside, I was over at my cousin Serene's house, and I felt naked. the shorts might have even come to my knees. I know I didn't wear the hot shorts that were popular in the 70s, but even with part of my leg showing, I felt naked.
When was this?
This was, I had to be maybe 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And were you doing this surreptitiously?
Yeah. I was over at my cousin's house for the weekend.
So it was a little rebellion.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sansa Rae Tate, and she's written a memoir called Little X, Growing Up in the Nation of Islam. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Sansa Rae Tate, she's written a new memoir about growing up third generation in the Nation of Islam, and her memoir is called Little X. And Sansa Rae, you're now what, in your early 30s?
Correct.
You write in your book that you grew up not respecting people in other neighborhoods who acted like they couldn't keep their own neighborhood clean if the white man didn't help them.
Yes. One of the good things I learned in the nation was about individual accountability, and that you don't need a government program to keep your streets clean. You take your broom and you go out there and sweep the streets. You don't need a government program to feed your children well. You learn nutrition and you budget according to the money that you have. You don't need a government program to raise decent children. You take time and you discuss morals and decency with them.
You were taught a lot about what women should be like, what men should be like. You say in your book, your brother learned that your mother and all the rest of the women were put on earth to serve him, cook for him, and clean up behind him, whereas you learned that men were here to protect and provide for you. Elaborate on that for us. What were some of the things you learned that you were supposed to do as a girl?
As a girl, I was supposed to learn how to keep a clean home, how to plan balanced meals, how to care for children, how to run a home efficiently, with a schedule, with cleaning, I guess, the living room, dining room, and bathroom on Mondays, and the basement and other rooms on Tuesdays, and cooking at, 3 p.m., and learning how to organize and run a household.
What kind of life were you taught to prepare for as a woman?
I was taught to prepare to be a good wife and mother. I was taught that the only way I would get into heaven would be through pleasing a husband. But early on, I decided that I was going to become a god-awful career woman.
Who'd you tell that to?
My mother, her sister, friends, my cousins, everybody.
What'd they say?
That I would learn the hard way.
Learn what? That
that men don't like independent women, that I was too intelligent for my own good, that God made society a certain way, and if women took care of their roles and men took care of their roles, then we would have a better society.
Did you feel that the boys and the men that you knew in the nation were respectful of girls and women, or that the women were taken advantage of?
I think, in my family, I felt like the women were respected, but I do know of too many cases where women with 7 children were left to fend for themselves. I know of cases where men wound up in jail and the women were left to fend for themselves. And I thought that was very unfortunate because the women sacrificed their lives and any career ambitions they had in order to be the wife and mother that they thought God wanted them to be. And then in the end, they still had to go out and hold down a job and raise a family.
What were the reactions of Christian relatives to your family being in the nation?
They thought we were crazy. My grandmother's father had helped to found a holiness church, and for his daughter to go off and join this Nation of Islam, which didn't believe that Jesus was God or the Son of God, that caused quite a bit of friction in her family, and they didn't speak to her for about 20 years.
Your mother converted from the nation to Orthodox Islam. What made her lose faith in the nation?
She began asking questions, and like I said, though we were taught to be intelligent individuals. We were not supposed to question authorities. So that put her at odds with officials. She began to question things. Well, things as basic as, on the one hand, we're condemning Europeans and everything about them, but then our men are dressing in European suits instead of African attire. Our economic system is based on capitalism rather than, I don't know, something else. But there just seemed to be so many inconsistencies. And then she realized that the corruption and exploitation that my father thought he might have escaped by being in this all-black nation was quite prevalent.
In what way did your father feel like he was being exploited within the nation?
Brothers were supposed to sell a certain quota of newspapers, and if they didn't, they were
Muhammad Speaks.
Muhammad Speaks newspapers. And if they didn't, they were supposed to pay out of their pockets for them. My grandfather, at one point, had become distant from the nation because he refused to continue to pay for these newspapers that he was not able to sell because the nation was not even popular at this time. So you had men paying their family's bill money to pay for newspapers because they had a certain quota to meet, and that seemed like exploitation to my mother. You also had men working long hours at some of our businesses and not getting paid for the extra hours, but they were doing it because they were felt like they were building our own nation.
When did you start to rebel against Islam of both sorts?
I guess by the time I was a teenager, and my rebellion started as not wanting to wear these clothes because they made me a target at school. Some things just didn't seem to make sense to me. It seemed like too much was changing. I think because I had learned in coming out of the nation. Now, the nation experience was so intense that I was thinking if I ate potato chips, I might get sick or something because, like I said, our doctrines were so strict. You know, no pork meant no pork, not even foods cooked in pork, and we were always taught that consequences would be severe. So I'm growing up thinking that I have to walk this very straight line and believe all these philosophies and principles and lessons. And then at 10 years old, between the ages of 10 and 12, after Elijah Muhammad has died and his son is taking the organization toward Orthodox Islam, I'm learning now that, well, white people are not the devil, which is fine, but all my life I have been taught that this is so and this is what you need to believe and you better believe it to keep yourself out of trouble. So I'm learning that what I had learned was not true, that it was mythology and that now we were going to pray to a different God and practice a different philosophy. And that was, so I guess I probably started rebelling back then.
Well, here's another thing that interests me about growing up in a new religion. So many people enter a new religion rebelling against an old one and thinking that in the new religion no one will have to rebel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And somehow that cycle in many instances just continues of rebelling against the religion you're brought up to, whether it's an alternative or one of the real old ones.
That's exactly what happened in my family. My grandmother was about the same age. She was in her early 20s when she rebelled and left the church of her upbringing. I was the same age.
You were the same age when you left the nation. You were the same age as your grandmother when she left church.
Correct, and for the same reasons. Because in her Christian church, she saw hypocrisy and corruption and the like. And then and she thought she would not experience that in this new religion. But that was exactly what I experienced in this new religion.
Do you think of yourself now as an atheist, agnostic, a religious person who just doesn't necessarily go to a temple very much?
Certainly not an atheist. I love God, believe in God strongly. I believe in prayer. I'm comfortable in a Baptist church, in an Islamic temple. I found myself in a Catholic church over the summer covering a story, and I was comfortable there. And I see so many similarities between the philosophies. It's I just think it's unfortunate that we allow them to divide us in our communities and our families, you know, in our society. But yes, I do believe in God. I do believe in the golden rule.
Well, Sansaray Tate, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me here.
Sansaray Tate's new memoir is called Little X, Growing Up in the Nation of Islam.